Hey guys, back at it at Club 30, sitting here with Jay Lydell. How are we doing today?
Doing great. Doing great, Hank. Thank you. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm excited about today's episode. I think this is one of the reasons why we wanted to do Club 30, an opportunity to learn for someone that's, you know, had an amazing sports career and now transition into a very impressive business career. We're talking about Alex Rodriguez.
I'm getting booed. It's my third strikeout. And you know, when you strike out and you make the last out in baseball, like usually Jeter would bring out my glove. He knows I'm going through a hard time. And so he gives me my glove and my hat. And he lets me kind of sit there for 30 seconds. I was in between innings. And he says, look around. It's Wednesday afternoon. It's 100 degrees. And there's 54,000 people watching us play. But how lucky are we? And boom, that completely changed the paradigm of what I was thinking. Next at bat, I come up and hit a game-winning walk-off home run. And he's waiting at home plate. He goes, see, I told you.
What a great conversation. I mean, he's super impressive. Kind of does him a disservice to say that he made a transition into business because now he's about to be the, you know, a majority owner of the Timberwolves and the Lynx. Like, that's not a transition. That's doing it. And it was fascinating.
It's a power move. No question about it. And obviously, he's always been interested in business. He started A-Rod Corp during his career. You know, just to see his commitment to his process and also the amount of work he's done with himself as a person throughout his career to learn and to grow. And that's also helping him now as a business owner. So I think this conversation is for the baseball fan, for the Yankee fan, for someone starting a business, and for someone that wants to grow as a person. So, guys, here's our sit down with Alex Rodriguez. He played 22 seasons in the MLB, 14-time All-Star, one of the most accomplished baseball players of all time. Welcome to Club 30, baseball and business legend, Alex Rodriguez.
Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers. Great to have you here, Alex. Appreciate you taking the time. You know, I think back of the first time I met you. I don't know if you remember this, but our friend Adam Maudlin, the real estate guru, he took you to my place in Hell's Kitchen at the time. And I remember two things when I met you. You're bigger in person than I thought. And secondly, your suit was really nice. So, and every time I see you, you're so well-dressed. Like, where is that coming from? Fashion, is that important to you?
You know, Hank, thanks again. Coming from you, a fashion icon. And by the way, our buddy Adam Maudlin, who's an incredible broker and even a better dresser. I think, you know, growing up and born in New York, raised in Miami, I was fortunate to have my father from age 0 to 10. Before him and my mother split, he was passionate about really three things. Baseball, number one, because we're Dominican and that's like a religion. Number two, he was an entrepreneur and great with numbers. And number three, he loved fashion. And I remember as a little kid being 3 years old and going into my father's closet and there was like 30 suits and like 30 white shirts. And I was like, oh man, I want that to be my closet one day. I just think just from that,
so would you say you're a suit guy? That's where you feel the best?
Yeah, Hank, and I'll tell you why, because like I played almost 15 years with the Yankees, and I wore my pinstripes every day.
Yeah.
And to me, that took me from leaving my apartment in the Upper West Side, and once I put those pinstripes on, I converted to like this A-Rod, like a gladiator, like I'm at war, I'm battling for the city of New York. And then once I took that off, I just became back to Alex, and I'm just like, hey, you know, so I love to work today, and when I go to the office, I'm there 5 days a week, suit and tie. It's not because I like to dress up. Yeah, I do like to dress up a little bit, but in my mind, I'm here to work. And then the minute I get home, I take all my clothes off, put on my pajamas, and just like chill out.
But for me, like going to every game, putting that suit on, walking to the game or taking the car to the game, that was part of the process to get the tie on, to get the jacket on. Did you feel the same way, like getting ready started when you're putting your suit on, walking through the game?
Yeah, and 100%. And like even for me, I've always been a big planner and I always believe in process. And I've always said that a dummy with a plan will beat a genius without one every time. So I took note of that and trying to prepare. And the night before, even to today, I lay out my outfit the next day. I just laid on the floor, put on my suit, put on my shirt, a couple ties, shoes, and that's it. In the morning, I have nothing else to think about. I go work out, take a shower, put my suit on, and go right to work.
And some people might think this happened over time with you, but I heard that this was something that you did already as a rookie. At 20 years old, you showed up to a meeting in a suit and tie,
yeah,
looking for real estate.
Yeah.
A close friend told me this.
Yeah. Well, you got good sources. And look, we're all a product of our environment, right? I grew up, my favorite movie of all time was Wall Street and Gordon Gekko. And he was always in a sharp suit. And then my heroes growing up, Magic Johnson, Cal Ripken, you know, they were guys that Michael Jordan, they wore suits. And we're like dinosaurs now because not a lot of people wear suits, especially after COVID. People are like, where the hell are you going, a wedding? Like, no, I'm just going to work.
And where's base? Home base right now is Miami.
Yeah.
But how much time do you spend in New York?
I probably go 60% in Miami. That's where our company headquarters. My two daughters are there in Coconut Grove. I would spend probably 20%, 25% of my time in Minnesota. And then the balance between New York and travel.
And so born in New York, and then you mm-hmm. can move to Dominican and later mm-hmm. on Miami. But when I say New York City, what does it mean to you?
It means everything. It's home, right? I mean, being born in the city, just a few miles away from Yankee Stadium, this great city, I just feel so connected to it. And I was fortunate enough in 2009 to be able to be part of a championship team and to bring the 27th title to this great city of New York. I mean, even just walking outside, I had a couple of police guys say, a police woman say, thank you for 09. We need to bring back the championship. To me, I feel very connected to New York City.
So you played 22 seasons, 13 in New York City. So many different awards, accomplishments. Is there one that stands out to you personally that you feel like that one means a little extra?
I mean, that's an easy one just because, you know, I played for, you know, almost a quarter of a century professionally.
Yeah.
And was part of one title, right? So definitely 09 was the coolest year of my entire life. And being part of a championship team, with the exception of obviously my two daughters being born, there's nothing better than to be part of a championship team here in New York.
So I moved to New York as a nobody, even though I played national team in Sweden and won a couple of championships overseas. When I came here, nobody knew my name, or I had to really establish myself. For you, it was very different. You came here as a big star. Like, how was that? Did you feel the pressure, or did you see just a huge opportunity?
A little bit of both. You know, I was very fortunate. If you've tracked my career, I was drafted at 17 out of Westminster Christian. I was drafted by Seattle. Now, I had to bring the map out and go Miami to Seattle. How far is this place? Where is this place? So I spent 7-8 years there. So I cut my teeth a little bit in the Pacific Northwest. I had a great manager in Lou Piniella, a great bunch of men that really helped me develop. And then I went to Texas for 3 years, and then I ended up in New York. And I think that was the perfect kind of narrative for me because I went from fairly smaller market to mid-market to the biggest market
right
in the world. So it was a lot. And then when you wear the pinstripes, they say that the pinstripes are heavy and not a lot of people can deal with the spotlight. So I certainly felt that at times, and it was the greatest decision I ever made was to come to New York, and then I doubled down when I re-signed to extend my career and finish here.
Was that something you always wanted to do, represent the Yankees, like me being born here?
You know, yes and no, but not really, because I grew up a Mets fan, and 1986, they won the world title, and that was one of the most famous teams of all time. Over the last century and a half, right, you think about that team and the personalities, and there's a great documentary by I think Disney Plus put it out, and my favorite player was Keith Hernandez and Gary Carter and Strawman and Dwight Gooden, and quite honestly, I was a shortstop my whole life, so Yankees had that taken care of
pretty well.
Yeah. So I never really even envisioned me coming to New York because I was a shortstop, and so obviously, you know, things turned out differently.
How's your relationship now with Washington Heights? Do you ever go back?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you ever, are you a reminisce guy, or are you a passes the past and I move forward.
Oh, no, no. I'm a traditionalist by nature. Like, I was raised by a very conservative family. I was raised to, you know, knee down to God and stand tall for the flag. And I'm very much into history. When I went, every day I drove by almost Washington Heights going to Yankee Stadium, and I reminisced. I know my family still has a lot of friends there, and it's definitely something that we've done a lot of philanthropy work, which we've kept very quiet, but I love Washington Heights.
That must be so cool, though. Like, you drive by where you grow up, where your dreams started, and then you go to the Yankee Stadium. Like, for me, yeah, it was a huge dream come true to play here, but Sweden felt so far away. But to pass that every morning going to practice or to the game, it must have been almost surreal, no?
Surreal, a little bit of imposter syndrome. Like, how was I so lucky to wear the pinstripes, to play for the greatest owner in sports history in George Steinbrenner? You and I share that we both played in very famous buildings, MSG and the old Yankee Stadium. I mean, how lucky are we? And then to share the greatest fans in the world in New York City. That was phenomenal. And to this day, I look back and I'm like, wow, awesome.
Wow. Can we talk a little bit about imposter syndrome?
Mm-hmm.
Because people see Alex A-Rod.
Sure.
And they think that guy's got it nailed.
Mm-hmm.
When's the last time you woke up and thought, like, I can't be in this room? Do you ever have that feeling anymore?
I don't know. Jave is as strong as, like, I can be in this room. I have a lot of confidence, but every day I wake up with two thoughts, like, how do I diminish my ego today? And how do I enhance my self-awareness? Because at the end of the day, Jay, I grew up with basically food stamps, right? Like, once my father left, my mother was back. It was the three siblings, older brother, older sister. I was the baby. And I remember looking at food stamps one day, and I was like, oh, my God. Like, I got to get to work. And this is like, I'm a 12, 13-year-old boy. I got to help my mother because she's not going to make it. So I've always had that confidence that I can be an alpha and I can be a leader. But, you know, you walk into the NBA board meetings, and to your left, you have Steve Ballmer. To your right, you have Mark Cuban, Jeannie Buss, Mark Lazary, Jim Dolan. I looked around and go, what the hell am I doing in this room? I hope they don't kick me out, right? So that was the last time. That was just happened last week.
I mean, if they can't see you, they can't be you, right? And so how do you think about your role in this elite ownership circle for everybody out there who has a dream, right? Especially, you know, kids of color who have never had a seat at the table. Now you have one of the biggest seats at the table in sports ownership.
Jay, is a phenomenal question, and I've thought a lot about this. 25 years ago, I had an opportunity to sit down with one of my heroes, Magic Johnson. And, you know, growing up, there's not a lot of Magic Johnsons in my neighborhood, both in business and as an athlete. But when I saw Magic have a Hall of Fame career, and I watched him closely in Showtime, you know, with that great team, Kareem, and led by Pat Riley and Dr. Buss, and then I saw him pivot to be a Hall of Fame businessman and bring those great skills into the boardroom, and he's a man of color. That's the first time I said, well, why not us? We can do it. He's more like me than just some, you know, white gentleman that runs Goldman Sachs or JP Morgan. I couldn't relate with them, but I could relate with Magic. So that gave me the hope, that diminished my imposter syndrome a little bit. And then I met with him, and he actually gave me the floor plan of how he did things. And I think, Jay, as I think about my life, and Hank as well, is like, our responsibility is to bring other people of color, men, women of all kinds, and bring them in the board with us. It's not enough for us to go in the boardroom and shut the door. We got to keep that door and fight for the 99%, fight for the common folks. And right now, more than ever, there's a discrepancy between rich and poor. And I am obsessed with how do we close this gap.
Yeah, I love that.
And I want to go back a little bit to the Yankees. You know, it's one of the biggest sport franchises in the world. But was there anything that surprised you when you signed and you came there? Obviously, we're going to get into also you're a team owner now. But let's start with the Yankees. Just, was there anything that surprised you coming into such a huge organization?
Honestly, Hank, it was all about George Steinbrenner, right? And how, whether it's business, sports, or parenting, is all about leadership. And it's interesting how much leadership this country's lacking, how much leadership we're lacking around the world. And what George Steinbrenner taught me was his vision, his ability to deploy capital, his ability to recruit the best people in the world and pay them handsomely, but he expected a lot. And we want that challenge, right? Jay, we want that challenge. We want to say, you pay me a lot, but I want to be aligned with you. I want to help, you know, roll this boat with you. And his attention to detail, his passion for the team, his commitment to the fans, his commitment to giving back. And George Steinbrenner gave back more to charity with one condition. He would say, Alex, if people know that I helped your friend XYZ, I'm going to take the money back. So he wanted to help, but he wanted to do it in quiet.
Yeah.
He goes, that would hurt my reputation if people know I'm that nice.
Can't be too nice. But also playing for the Yankees, obviously, with that comes a lot of pressure. So like, how did you deal with the pressure? And also because I always wondered, you guys play so many games. How do you get to that level mentally every night? So many games. Would you say it's the biggest challenge playing baseball, just to be in the right place mentally every game?
I had Navy SEAL training. Like, to play 200 games in 230 days, and those 30 days are not off. Like, 15 of those, you're flying cross-country, landing in a city at 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning and playing that same day. So that type of training, to do that for 25 years, it's unheard of. And knowing what I know now, I don't think I can do it, you know, if I had to go back. Because, right. You know, we were naive. We were just growing, just say, hey, this is normal. So what are you trained for?
Yeah.
Mentally, physically, spiritually, and everything has to be eliminated. And you have to be like a racehorse and just completely focus on the job at hand. And that job was long, and it was tough, and it was difficult.
So obviously, when you play that many games, you can't spend too much energy and time to prepare for every game. You're going to get too tired, I think.
Mm-hmm. But
so when did your routine start?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you play Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at that, was it after lunch you really mm-hmm. start to pay attention to the game that night? Or how long was the process to get to that place?
So there was be many times where we would play 21 days in a row, right? So like, there's no breathing room. So really the recovery starts the minute the game is over. Like, literally in the first 5 minutes, you go in the cold tub, you get some work done, you meet with your soft tissue, and you maybe sit for 30 minutes at the table just doing soft tissue stuff, and you have a good meal, and you try to prepare for bed and get, you know, solid 8 hours of sleep. Wake up in the morning, you go to the gym at 9, you're there for about an hour, you ride the bike for 30 minutes, again, scar tissue, making sure that everything works. You get a dynamic lift. I will go back and nap, lunch, and audit my apartment at 2:30.
When do you get away from the game? Could you? Well, like, when you play during the season, can you get away from the game between games, or you don't have time?
I mean, we met while I was playing.
Yeah.
And it would be something like, visit your house, go have a cocktail, go have a little dinner. But, you know, my dinners were hour and a half, and then I had to get going, right? And you basically give up everything in your life for this great goal that you're living, the American dream, and you're playing for the New York Yankees. You're playing for George Steinbrenner. You're playing for the most sophisticated, smartest fans on the planet. And these fans, you couldn't take any shortcuts. They knew if you were running hard, playing hard, if you were phony, they knew it all, and that's why I loved it so much. Yeah,
I agree. Like, playing in New York, when you did well, it amazing place. But when you struggle, they let you know as well. But that contrast made it so exciting. And that's why I was so nervous going out to every game, because every game mattered.
Every day mattered.
So you were definitely on your toes. You were on edge walking in. And it's very different for me now going to Madison Square Garden today, because obviously today it's about the experience, having fun, meeting people. But during my career, I was on edge, but I love that feeling too.
Yeah.
And I would say that's the one feeling I miss, not playing, feeling that edge. And I might find it, you know, later on in life, but it's so fresh still, coming off of retirement 2 years ago. But
Derek Jeter, I think I'm having a horrific game. I'm getting booed. It's my third strikeout. And you know, when you strike out and you make the last out in baseball, like usually Jeter would bring out my glove. And he knows I'm going through a hard time. And so he gives me my glove and my hat. And he lets me kind of sit there for 30 seconds. I was in between innings and we're at the old stadium. And he says, look around. It's Wednesday afternoon. It's 100 degrees. And there's 54,000 people watching us play. And how lucky are we? And boom, that completely changed the paradigm of what I was thinking. Next at bat, I come up and hit a game-winning walk-off home run. And he's waiting at home plate. He goes, see, I told you.
That's amazing. To your point about every day still matters. Like, how do we make every day matter, right? Like, what gets you, what makes you nervous?
What makes me nervous today is my daughter just had prom a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
That makes me nervous. My daughter's driving. She's a senior. She's going to Michigan next year. My little one, Ella, is a freshman. That makes me nervous. There's no responsibility in the world that's more important than being a father. And, you know, discipline and life starts at home. And I think gratitude, Jay, you know, when I look at my life and I go back, Sports Illustrated came out when I was 15 years old and said, this is the best player in the country. And at that time, I was just young, skinny Alex Rodriguez, right? 6'3", 170 pounds, soaking wet. And at 17, I get drafted. I get $1.3 million signing bonus by Seattle. At 24, I get the largest contract in the history of the game. At 32, I re-up and do another big contract. And from the age of 15 to the age of like 39, nobody says no to me. So I went from Alex Rodriguez, somewhere on Texas, I became A-Rod. And then I got nailed with the biggest and longest suspension of Major League Baseball history for PED use. And that was the worst moment of my life. It was the most embarrassing. I let so many people down. And when I think about that moment, the gift and the curse of it, the curse is obvious. The gift was that it was the first time in my life that I heard the word no with capital N and a capital O. And that's when my journey with therapy started. And I turned the lens inward and I had a lot of work to do. And sometimes you get a house, I'm in real estate, you can buy something, you can put paint, windows, and you can fix it up. This time I had to tear the whole house down and start with one brick at a time. And when I think about that journey, coming back to New York as a Yankee, 40 years old, broken down, two hip surgeries, two knee surgeries, New York paper said 95% said I won't make the team. And as a 41-year-old guy, I came out and, you know, led the team in home runs, led the team back to the postseason. And to think about that coming back as Alex Rodriguez, a 15-year-old boy, I was a different person. And when I thought about winning back pre-suspension, it was about contracts. It was about nice suits. It was about women. It was about cars. Nonsense. When I think about winning today, it's about my daughters. It's about gratitude. It's about, you know, collaborating with great people and having other people on my team succeed. And how can I be a mentor to them? So in one case, I may have thrown away the Hall of Fame, which is absolutely heartbreaking. I have no one to blame but myself. But on another hand, God has opened up an opportunity to maybe take my lessons and pass it on to the next generation, starting with my daughters.
Like you put it, you started inside. Like, did that make you change the way you looked at baseball, the whole experience being part of the team? Did you appreciate it more? How did that change?
Oh, man. You know, it changed so much. I was a robot for a long time. It was my coping mechanism. It was like John Rambo. I was bred to go to war and, like, fight and not. I wasn't going to laugh no matter how good your joke was. Like, I was very, like, disciplined and focused. And sometimes I would go to the stadium and, like, not even play music, just be visualizing my at-bats. And then if you were in my Suburban on the way to Yankee Stadium, post-suspension, I was like, hey, I'm an old man. I'm not supposed to do much. I have a Frank Sinatra song on. I have Bon Jovi, Coldplay. And I would say to myself, literally, like, if I hit three home runs or if I strike out five times, these same three songs are going back on and I'm going to be singing. Sometimes I'll smoke a cigar on the way home. And I was just like, life is good. And just being content with whatever the results was. And as a result, Hank, the ball became bigger. It was slower. The fans never booed. I remember one day I struck out three times and I was kind of dreading the reporter because they all come fast and furious. And instead of being defensive and like, oh, well, that was a tough pitch, da, 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 I would say, fellas, was that bad or what? I mean, that was pathetic. I cannot believe the fans didn't boo me. And the next day, Jay, I would wake up looking for the back page.
Right.
And there was not even a mention of my three strikeouts. And I go, wait a minute. Attitude determines altitude.
What did therapy do to you? Like, was it the catalyst? How did you approach it? Like, what can you distill? Because I know Hank and I, we share a great coach. Hank introduced him to me when I was going through some tough times. And learning that mindset and happiness is a choice was a really empowering concept for me.
Such a great topic, Jay. You know, I spent so much time. I've been doing it for, you know, like 10 or 12 years now. And I feel like I'm sometimes rounding second base or sometimes I feel like I'm approaching second base, depending on the day. But I think I was kind of raised in an environment with a bunch of BSers. And I grew up not knowing the difference between someone who's giving it to me straight or someone who's BSing me. Because that's all I knew was BS. So as a result, I sounded like a BSer. And I didn't understand why people said, why aren't you being authentic? And I'm like, I'm trying to be authentic. And, you know, looking back, even though I was trying to be authentic, it sounded like I was full of crap, right? So I think, one, it helped me identify BS artists from not. Also, it helped me deal with my truth much better and come from a position of truth. And being authentic is being vulnerable and not always leading with your best. Sometimes you lead with your worst. And I just think self-awareness, understanding that I'm just a vehicle of my talent. Like, God gave me this unique talent and it's my responsibility to maximize it. And then once I do something with it, to be able to share it with the world and make that a better place versus the ego is about me. I own my talent. I'm just a manager of it. God is going to be in charge of when he takes it away and when he gives it. So it's decreased pressure for me. Like, writing a big check for the Timberwolves, that's big. Doesn't compare to my daughter going to prom or my daughter's giving the keys to a car. I mean, you're talking about scary.
Right.
I think that's one of the biggest.
I mean, you've done such a good transition from sports to business and obviously growing a lot as a person. Has that helped you a lot moving into this next chapter in your life, starting a bit? Well, you started a business already throughout your career.
Yeah.
How much has this helped you? Working on yourself, taking this next step in life?
It's everything, Hank. Like, if I think about it, I remember one of my heroes, Jamie Dimon. He was giving a public speech I was at, taking a bunch of notes when he speaks because the guy's like just a genius. And he talked about, like, business is all about trust and to be able to sleep at night, right? And to know that your partner's going to do the right things when you're not looking. And he talked about, like, if you're not trustworthy, I'd like put you in a different category. You almost don't exist in the bit. You exist as a human being, but I can never do business with you, right? So when I think about my therapy and my development, is the only way I've been able to take my business. It starts right here, man, ground zero. And if you're not a solid person, if you're not trustworthy, there's no way that people are going to let you in a room with NBA owners or some of the great partners that I have, some Adam Modlin, those kind of friends. It all starts with the work. And I'm proud that I've been able to do some of the work. I know you guys have too.
Yeah, and I think when you grow up and you play sports, especially team sports, you get kind of spoiled having great teammates, right? So I feel like when you leave the sports and you step into this new world where now it's time to pick your team, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You might already have part of your team,
mm-hmm.
friends, family,
mm-hmm.
but then going into business, like, how important is that to you to make sure you pick the right team? Do you have a mentor today helping you making good decisions?
Yeah.
And what does team mean to you today?
It's exactly like sports. It's exactly like sports. You can't win without a great team. And then you have to have great alignment. And you have to recruit the right, I mean, I would say hire slow, fire fast, but those five people around you, Hank, you and I are always going to be able to get a meeting. But then you walk in with Jay, I'm like, oh, okay, you guys, okay, 1 + 1 = 5 here, I get it, right? And we're going to be an average of the five people we surround ourselves with. And I think some of the experiences of a lot of the athletes that I mentor today, they have a hard time with this piece, because just because we're good at hockey or baseball doesn't mean we're going to be good in business. And we have to work 10 times harder in business than baseball or hockey, because God gave us a unique talent in the sport. We're not as talented in the world of, we're competing against Warren Buffett, we're competing against Barry Sternlicht, Jamie Dimon. These are the best of the, and they've been doing it for 50 years, right? So I think team is everything. And then creating alignment with your team, right? The biggest alignment is economic alignment, to make sure that when you win, they win. And at the same time, if you lose together. And I think all those principles are really important.
I mean, you see a lot of athletes after their career, it's, you know, it's a slippery slope. What are you supposed to do? How do you find purpose? But also financially, you see a lot of athletes get into trouble. And us here talking about trust, I find it so important to have a good team around you. If it's your business manager or advice you're getting from friends, I mean, I feel like it's so hard to perform, even during your career, to stay grounded if you don't have a good team. So anything you want to talk about when it comes to like giving advice to young athletes getting into the big leagues, but also when they retire, like, is there anything specific there you feel like, I wish they did this, or
yeah,
that could help them?
You know, we were talking, Jay, earlier about like how this is one thing that I'm really, really passionate about, and I'm really trying to make a difference in my life. And the prism that I'm coming from is my mother, who had two jobs, who basically was minimum wage. And how do we democratize and help my mother invest with Blackstone, invest with Warren Buffett, invest with Jamie Dimon? I mean, wouldn't that be amazing? Even if she only had $500, that's sometimes all people have. But why couldn't 500, if it's 4X, is 2,000? And then you can invest 2,000, and over time, compounding interest really works. So that's one thing. The other prism, obviously, is athletes. I'm very passionate about athletes. Now, when I entered the game in 1994, the industry of athletes, holistically, was making about $1 billion, okay? Players were going bankrupt at a pace of about 60%. You fast forward to today, that billion has turned into about $6 billion. And athletes going bankrupt from 60%, you would think went to 40%. No, they jumped up to almost 80%.
Wow.
So what does that tell you? It's not really about making more and more and more. It's about protecting, saving, and investing.
Yeah.
And having the right people around you, right? I'm just saying, like, I'm really passionate. And all these people, all these owners, all these commissioners, everybody wants to help out the athletes.
I think that the challenge a lot of times is, as an athlete, you come into the league, and now more than ever, you start making good money pretty fast, right? So, but your attention is really to your sport. That's where your commitment is. And financially, you trust the people you have around you, right? That's why I'm starting this conversation about trust and having a good team. It's so important. And I think that's where, you know, you really need to guide new players coming into the league to make sure they have the right people around. And it's hard. I remember towards the end of my career, I started to pay attention a lot more, but I always felt like I had a really good team around me,
yeah,
protecting me, making good decisions, and it made me relax.
It's funny. The first time I realized I really cared about Hank as a friend was he sent me, early in his career, before he had a team around him that he trusted, he sent me a post in the early days of Instagram, and it was a wine bottle. I'm like, hey, they're going to pay me $5,000 for this. And I'm like, this is athlete as commodity. Athlete as spokesperson, as shill, product, pitch man. I'm like, that's not Hank, right? Hank is more than the game. Hank has this thing where I felt like I needed to, I was like, this has to stop. We can't, I don't know if you even remember this, but it was,
I don't.
It was a shitty bottle of wine, you know, like you had no business or real connection to this, and they just wanted to have the free promote, right? And what is so exciting with what you're doing, Alex, is that you are spearheading the evolution from athlete as spokesperson to athlete as owner, right? And now everybody thinks, like, how can I be an owner of this? I don't need to be involved in the weeds and in the minutia, but I want to learn. How do I own equity rather than how do I take a skim off the top? And I always thought about that moment, which is like, thank God we didn't do that wine promo because you know, you're not a grand somme. And but I think this, like, the path that Alex is blazing, ownership, and like, that's the beacon, right? And so that kind of leads me to my next question, which is big check on Thursday or Friday, probably another big one. Has that scratched the itch, or has...
So I think, look, I'm a big believer, and I tell this to our youngsters in our office, we don't want to go wide and shallow. Mm-hmm. We want to go narrow and deep.
Okay.
I was really good at baseball. Hank's really great at hockey. It would be foolish for me to say, oh, now I'm going to be good at hockey too. So I think staying in your lane, Warren Buffett always talks about your circle of competence, really understanding it, staying within that circle. And for me, like, my biggest bet, my most exciting bet, besides being a New York Yankee and a father, is being, you know, co-owners with my partners with the Timberwolves and how we can drive that. Now, in the ecosystem of sports, sports is just a small fraction of that. You have real estate play. You have entertainment. You have media. You have arena, right? And you have, you know, 29 other great partners in other markets that are wonderful partners. While we try to beat each other's brains out on the court, we're wonderful partners off the court in business, and we mm-hmm. share best practices. So I look at my first 3 or 4 years, and I have one of the greatest partners in the world, and Mark Lurie, is we are great partners because everything I'm terrible at, and that's a lot, he's literally the best in class. And my 25 years experience in sports help him. So we yep. make this kind of really good dynamic duo. Yep. And I'm really focusing my time, my attention. I bought a home in Minnesota. I'm spending a lot of time there. And really excited about that, but really understanding every 360 part of that business is yeah. what I'm all about.
Yeah. What is your business superpower? What lessons have you brought from being on field to the boardroom? Like, what is the thing that complements and is so powerful to Mark as his partner?
Well, I mean, it's probably better for him to answer, but I would say my grit, my determination, my work ethic, the fact that I have failed very publicly. And I've had to get back up, dust off, and not just keep walking, but I had to rebuild myself and really understand that I am so fortunate and grateful to be in this position. I think those are some of them.
Nice.
I mean, as an athlete, obviously winning was important, if not everything. Today, is achieving and winning still as important to you?
My relationship with winning has changed completely. I think about winning today as process over results. Mm. And I think if you have the right team and you have the right vision, that if you play the process out and you have great effort and you honor your word and you do good by people and not always thinking about what's in it for me, I think developing young talent in that process to me is where the real glory is.
Last question. Will you ever slow down, or will you always continue to, you know, I don't know. It seems like you constantly push yourself to get better as a person with your business, what you're doing. And it's so impressive to watch, but do you think at some point you're just going to settle down with an umbrella in your drink and look at everything, or this is what you love to do, I guess?
You know, Hank, I am taking... Over the last 3 years, I've taken about 3 weeks to a month completely off. And because of our sports, I didn't get a chance to travel internationally. I mean, you're basically a slave to your career for 25 years. So now every summer I take a month and I travel Europe. I didn't get to do that for 25 years. And I take my best friends, I take my family, I take my daughters, and I get to enjoy a little bit part of your part of the world. I'm coming to Sweden this year.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm
going to
ask you for some advice.
Give you some advice there for sure. Yeah. It's a great time to be there, summertime.
So I think my slowing down is different. I would say my thoughts and my focus are more concentrated. So instead of doing 10 things, I'm doing 2 things. I'm doing real estate and I'm doing the Timberwolves. And that's it. Mm-hmm. Then everything else is a lot more no's than yes.
Yeah. Great.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much for being here. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah,
so
that was awesome.
Thanks a lot, Alex.
You're doing amazing work, and thank you for being so candid. And
thank you, Jay.
Us.
Yeah. And congrats on your career. This is going to be awesome. And Hank, I got to tell you, I'm an enormous fan. You're one of my heroes to see the way you handled this incredible city that's full of highs and lows, tremendous pressure. And I'm not a huge hockey fan, but you made me a hockey fan, just like you made millions of people around the world hockey fans. So I salute you, and anything you need from me, I'm here for you.
Thank you so much, Alex.
Yeah.
Appreciate
it. Hey, Matt.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, guys, that was it for today's guest, Alex Rodriguez. Really appreciate him coming on Club 30 and talking about so many different things. I love that, Jay.
Yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed. I wish I could have been taking notes because there's so much to absorb. But I got a lot from that, and I hope club members did too.
You know what's good with that? We didn't take notes, but we can listen to this.
That's true. And to that point, if you do like what you hear, we'd love for you to join Club 30 and be a member here by subscribing and joining us on this journey as Hank and I explore all the best people in New York City and what it takes to succeed.
Thank you for listening, and until next time.
See you next week. We'll